This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
In those initial sweeps, there were political figures from across the spectrum who were detained, most of whom have since been released. But for some reason, the members of the Oromo Liberation Front are still in detention.
That's Human Rights Watch Deputy Africa Director Lateta Bader urging the Ethiopian government to free seven top opposition figures arbitrarily detained for around 3 years. Details coming up. Also, a four-story building collapses in Cameroon, killing at least 33 people. And Gabon has validated 19 candidates, including current President Ali Bongo, for next month's presidential election. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Citing two military sources, Reuters reports a suicide bomber killed at least 30 soldiers and wounded scores more inside a military academy in Somalia's capital Mogadishu today in an attack claimed by the extremist Al-Shabaab militant group. A military campaign launched by government forces and allied militiamen last year has forced the Al-Qaeda-linked group from large swaths of territory in southern Somalia, but the militants have continued to stage deadly raids. In recent weeks, with the military campaign against them stalled as the army prepares a second phase of the offensive, Al-Shabaab fighters have stepped up their attacks. In late May, they killed at least 54 Ugandan peacekeepers at a base south of Mogadishu. They laid siege to Baidoa, one of the country's largest cities, for nearly 2 weeks, and they have staged a series of raids in Mogadishu this month. The bombing on Monday targeted the Jale Siad Military Academy. The victims hailed from the lower Shebale region and had come to the capital for training, according to Captain Ali Farah, who knew some of them. He said he was aware of 10 deaths so far. Countries from the Mediterranean, Middle East, and Africa have agreed on steps to try to curb unauthorized migration and to tamp down some of the pressures driving people to leave home and make desperate attempts to reach Europe. After a one-day meeting yesterday led by the Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, the new alliance committed to crack down on human smugglers, but also to improve cooperation in certain areas like renewable energy to fight climate change and improved economic development for poorer nations. Participants from more than 20 countries agreed to make funding available to support development projects in what Italy's Meloni said would be a Rome process that would last for several years. She welcomed the pledge by the United Arab Emirates to provide $100 million and said the next step would be to organize a donors' conference. The restoration of diplomatic relations between Turkey and Egypt in early July is raising hopes for ending conflicts across the Middle East and Africa. For VOA, Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Turkey and Egypt have both been involved in civil wars in Ethiopia and Libya, and analysts hope the recent restoration of full diplomatic ties between Cairo and Ankara will help ease tensions across the Middle East and Africa regions. Libyan security analyst Aya Bouwella.
It could affect, for Egypt at least, their issue they have in Ethiopia, because both countries support different sides of the conflict. So in general, I think this is good. I think it's helpful for Libya as well, because both sides support different factions in Libya. And I think the stalemate has gone on for such a long time. It's about time that the existing powers figure out something that everybody can agree on.
Turkey's military intervention in support of Libya's government of national accord against Egyptian-backed forces of General Khalifa Haftar brought Turkey and Egypt to the brink of a direct confrontation. Now, Ankara says economic cooperation offers a way forward. Mesut Joshan is a presidential advisor at Istanbul's Yedi Tepe University.
When licking the tension time, almost the Turkey and Egyptian army come together face to face here. However, Turkey and Egyptian, first of all, maybe bring energy security and energy the trade. Secondly, when if they come together in the Libya, it should be beneficial both Turkey and the Libya.
But the Turkish military presence in Libya remains an obstacle, with Cairo calling for its removal. That is the warning from security analyst Aya Bouwella.
Egypt wants to see concrete actions. They want to see withdrawal of troops in Libya, the withdrawal of Syrian mercenaries in Libya. Egypt has a red line in Libya.
Libya's vast energy wealth offers a powerful impetus for cooperation between Turkey and Egypt. Jalel Hajawi at the Royal United Services Institute in London.
It's going to be about taking care of Libya, avoiding, you know, situations worsening in secondary theaters like Tunisia. If Chad gets into trouble because it's fragilized by the Sudan war, you would be able to just assume that Turkey and Egypt are roughly on the same side. Same thing with Sudan. You could, you know, you don't have the knee-jerk reaction of always being against the other.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has signed tens of billions of dollars in contracts with the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia, both allies of Egypt. Analysts say such deals will help ensure the future of Turkey and Egypt's new rapprochement, and with it, the removal of a destabilizing force in the regions. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Human Rights Watch says Malian armed forces and foreign fighters from the Russia-linked Wagner Group have summarily executed and forcibly disappeared several dozen civilians in Mali's central region since December. They also allegedly destroyed and looted civilian property and tortured detainees in an army camp. Between March 1st and May 30th, Human Rights Watch interviewed 40 people about the incident. They included 20 witnesses of abuses, 3 family members of victims, 2 community leaders, 5 Malian civil society activists, 8 representatives of international organizations, and 2 Sahel political analysts. Human Rights Watch also reviewed a video showing evidence of abuses by Malian soldiers and associated foreign forces. The government says it is not aware of any human rights violations, but that the public prosecutor in charge of the specialized judicial unit has opened an investigation for war crimes and crimes against humanity. Human Rights Watch is calling on Ethiopian authorities to immediately release 7 top members of the opposition party Oromo Liberation Front, or OLF, who have been detained without charge for about 3 years. The OLF is a political group that for decades fought a low-level insurgency for the self-determination of Oromos. Since Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's father is an Oromo farmer, VOA's Carol Van Dam asked HRW Deputy Africa Director Latita Bader why the seven continues to be held, and well, after Ethiopian courts have ordered them to be released.
This is a very good question to which there haven't been very clear answers throughout their detention. A number of them were initially detained as part of a broader sweep against political oppositions following the killing of an Oromo activist and singer, Haçalu Hundessa, 3 years ago. After that, some of these other figures were also detained. But in those initial sweeps, there were political figures from across the spectrum who were detained, most of whom have since been released. But for some reason, the members of the Oromo Liberation Front are still in detention. We documented a whole range of abusive practices during their detention. Due process violations, they've been moved from one detention facility to another, held in informal facilities, cut off, held incomunicado from their families, from their lawyers at times, sometimes for months on end, which obviously in a country where, like Ethiopia, where detainees are so dependent on their relatives to have access to food, clothes, medical care, is a real problem.
President Abiy Ahmed's father was a typical Oromo farmer. He speaks only Oromo. A lot of outsiders don't get this. I mean, are Oromia police holding these opposition figures because they oppose Ahmed's rule?
We've seen from quite early on in the premiership of Abiy Ahmed a tendency to arbitrarily arrest individuals, members of groups which are seen as opponents. And we've seen that across the political spectrum. I mean, it really started in mid-2019, where it was mainly Amhara opposition members who were being detained. But since late 2019, we've really seen this happening a lot again and again in Oromia and affecting Oromo political figures as well, and particularly, as we find here, these members of the Oromo Liberation Front. I think these cases highlight how right now in Ethiopia, high profile cases or cases involving people who are members of the political opposition are unlikely to have a just treatment when they are detained. And I think here, obviously, the particular concerns are more in terms of why the government, and this is first and foremost the authorities in Oromia, but also the federal government that should be overseeing these sorts of detentions, are not listening to the court orders. It's been particularly bad in their cases. I mean, we really are talking about individuals in some cases were moved around 14 times from one detention facility to the other. They were moved around also when there were reportedly monitors who were trying to visit them. So there really is a strategy here of lack of transparency, of keeping them away from their loved ones, from their lawyers.
So again, is this because they do not support Abiy Ahmed?
I mean, this is obviously a political group which have separate views and are considered to be part of the political opposition. We have seen particular trends of clampdowns on dissent in Oromia since very early on in the administration of Abiy Ahmed. It wasn't the OLF only who have been targeted. We've seen other political figures, Jawad Mohammed, for example, Bikile Gerba, who were also detained, whose members were also targeted. So this is a broader trend we have seen in Oromia.
That's Latita Bader, Deputy Africa Director for Human Rights Watch. She was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam from Rome. Gabon's Electoral Commission says it has validated 19 candidates, including current President Ali Bongo and several former ministers, for next month's presidential election. Reuters says Bongo's candidacy was approved despite opposition claims that he is not fit for the presidency. He suffered a stroke in October 2018 and was flown to Morocco for medical treatment. Bongo is standing for a third term after ruling for almost 14 years. The Gabonese Election Center says 27 applications were received by the filing deadline and 19 were approved. Other candidates include Pierre Clavar Maganga Musavu, founder and president of the Social Democratic Party, and Raymond Dong Sima, former prime minister. The campaign starts on August 11th and the voting will take place on August 26th. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Cameroon's President Paul Biya has ordered the demolition of poorly constructed illegal houses in the port city of Douala, the country's largest city and economic hub. The order came after a four-story building collapsed onto a smaller one yesterday, killing at least 33 people, including four children. Rescue workers are still digging through the rubble in hopes of finding survivors. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Douala, Cameroon.
Scores of rescue workers and military troops use spades to dig through the wreckage of a collapsed four-story building Monday in Douala, Cameroon's economic capital. Military bulldozers carry the dumb scattered pieces of the building onto an empty space near scores of onlookers. Lieutenant Colonel Abdel Kadri is one of the commanders of the firefighting department of Cameroon's military. He's supervising operations they hope will be for rescues and not just recovering bodies.
Il est à signaler simplement que le bâtiment R plus 4 était en état vétuste.
Kadri says the building was in an advanced state of degradation before it collapsed Sunday at about 1 a.m. local time. He says the collapsed building no longer constitutes a threat to its neighbors. The apartment building, which authorities estimate housed 160 people, collapsed onto a two-story one next to it that housed another 60. Samuel Dieudonné Ivaha Dibua is the governor of Cameroon's littoral region where Douala is located. He says the hope of finding survivors lessens by the hour.
We want to tell the population that 31 people are in the hospitals, and the military and also gendarmes are working to make sure that there is nobody remaining inside. So the military, they are still working, and we are sure that they are going to make effort to finish the work today or tomorrow.
Dubois said the injured are being treated at Douala's Lakintini and Dedo hospitals. Monday, the government said President Paul Biya dispatched a delegation led by Cameroon's Housing and Urban Development Minister to Douala to oversee demolition of unsafe housing. The collapse came as Douala's city council has been trying to demolish unsafe buildings in high-risk zones for floods or landslides. The council and Cameroon's housing ministry last year reported more than 500 buildings in high-risk zones were in danger of collapse. Authorities ordered owners to either reinforce or demolish their buildings, but Douala's city council reports fewer than 40 were repaired and none have been destroyed. Council officials say the building that collapsed early Sunday was not one of those marked for demolition. Edward Mfor is a member of the Cameroon Civil Society Group and a building contractor. He blames what he describes as a lack of respect by authorities for building safety standards.
The city like Douala is supposed to be well planned so that each one knows that this area is good to construct or not, or these are areas where we have floods or landslides. That information is not available. Normally, there's supposed to be some geotechnical survey approved by the state before you carry out story buildings. That is not done. Everybody's just doing what he or she wants to do, and then these are the result and effect like what just happened.
Cameroon's government has not responded to allegations that it does a poor job of policing standards in building construction. In June, the government issued a public warning to beware of poor quality cement and iron rods being sold in the country. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Douala, Cameroon.
And now for some sports news. The Women's World Cup is rolling. The exciting games that are being played in New Zealand and Australia have all football fans around the globe ecstatic. Here with me in studio is my colleague and sports analyst, Mokbil Yabaro. Glad to have you here, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Hayes.
So firstly, let's go into what do you predict that has the best possible chance to win this year's Women's World Cup?
I would obviously say the back-to-back champs, the U.S. side, are the obvious favorites. But the other teams that I would have to mention are Germany, Japan, Brazil, and Spain. They all came out swinging. Germany beat Morocco 6-0. Japan beat Zambia 5-0. Brazil beat Panama 4-0. And Spain also won 3-0 against Costa Rica. So I would have to choose those
few teams.
And next, Mokbil, what are your thoughts on the African teams that have made it into the tournament?
The four African teams are Nigeria, South Africa, Zambia, and Morocco. Nigeria tied 0-0 with the Olympic champions, Canada, which was not a bad result for them at all. But the rest of the African teams unfortunately lost. South Africa, to me, was sadly the biggest disappointment because they went up 1-0 against Sweden, which is a very strong team. But then they let the Swedes back in and they scored two to beat them 2-1. And then lastly, we've seen Zambia and Morocco, as we mentioned earlier, losing to both Japan and Germany 6-0 and 5-0 apiece.
Any breakout players to watch in this Women's World Cup?
If I were to have to choose, I would start with Alex Morgan from the U.S. side. She scored 121 goals for the national side and is probably on the top of the list for the Golden Boot. But Sophia Smith is a young star for the American side that has scored already twice in her first game against Vietnam when they won 3-0. Also, I would pick Rachel Daly from England and Alex Popp from Germany, just to name a few.
Our sports analyst, Mokbil Yabaro, thank you for your input.
Thank you for having me.
The second increase in petrol prices since President Bola Tinubu's government eliminated the national subsidy took Nigerians by surprise last week and sent transport fares, food prices, and the general cost of living rise.
Commuters and motorists say they are frustrated over the latest price hikes. Petrol went from about 71 to 82 cents per liter. Food and transport prices are also climbing. Several people we spoke to who do not want their last names used for fear of reprisals from authorities call the situation unfortunate. Public servant Ladi is one of them.
Sincerely, the increment is really posing a lot of challenges, especially in my own home. In fact, we have to cut down everything is affecting the quality of life in my home. We cannot afford the kind of meal we eat. Even the children are feeling the pulse.
Tokbe, a commercial driver, says he cannot make a profit with the current high prices.
I can say that government is not fair to us. I pray that God will touch their hearts to live up to the expectation by considering the masses, because the thing is biting harder.
Business owner Gerald, who is outraged over the higher prices, says crime will be on the rise if nothing is done to help the masses.
If you go to the street, you see a lot of persons trekking. If you just look at the society right now, everybody is confused. We don't know what to do. We don't know where to go. We don't even have hope.
The Independent Marketers Association of Nigeria says the increase in crude oil prices on the international market and a hike in the exchange rate are the reasons for the fuel price hikes. Some public offices and the College of Education Academic Staff Union have instructed employees to work only 2 days per week. Teacher Akin with the Federal College of Education says the hardship may lead to civil unrest if not handled well.
Life is not easy with this fuel increment. Whenever transportation fare is high, everything will go up. So I have to, as a man, as a husband, as a father to the children, I have to buckle up again to meet the challenges, because it's not easy.
Many Nigerians are pleading with state and national officials to quickly increase the minimum wage to reduce poverty and prevent an increase in crime. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nicole Peters, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.